You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast episode 441.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes, hello, Cornflake.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
It's the same.
Yep. It's always good to hear your voice, though. I was going to say it's always good to see you, but that's not how we roll these days.
Yeah, we're on the Zoom, of course, and we rarely turn the cameras on for these Flopcast recordings, so this is audio only for us, just like it is for you, our four listeners. Hello.
Oh, hi.
And what are we doing today? I think we're going back to Saturday morning cartoon talk, as we did a couple of weeks ago, right?
Oh, yes. Good stuff from 1990.
We're going back to 1990, going back 30 years. That's coming up in a couple of minutes. Let's start with you, Cornflake. That's how we do things around here. What's going on? National Whatever Day.
How about we celebrate a 75th birthday for National Whatever Day this week? Because on October 19th, John Lithgow is turning 75.
John Lithgow. Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah, well, I first became aware of John Lithgow, I think, from his Third Rock days. I think that was like the first time I recall ever seeing John Lithgow's face. But that's only because I didn't see Footloose until so many years later. It was, remember, when we get together and we watched Footloose?
Sure I do. That was one of the best nights of my life, was getting together with you to watch Footloose.
Watching Footloose, I didn't realize that he was in that.
Oh, yeah, he was in that.
He was
the preacher man.
A riveting character, yes.
He didn't want the kids to dance.
He did not want the kids to dance. Well, his most recent thing is that he's a New York Times bestseller for a book that he wrote and illustrated. So he's very multi-talented.
Yeah, nobody read that, though. Nobody really read that. All right, Footloose. Yeah, he didn't want the kids to dance. You know how I stand on dancing, so I guess I'm kind of on Lithgow's side.
You make a good point. I had never drawn a parallel between you and John Lithgow before.
Well, when they're at that teen hangout restaurant drive-in joint and they pop in their cassette of Shalimar dancing in the sheets and they all start dancing and you really feel your sympathies shifting to the what if we make dancing illegal side of things.
Maybe he was on to something.
Yeah. I'm going to stand off to the side scowling like Lithgow.
Yes. I'm a much bigger fan of his music. He's got a few albums out.
I did not know that. I did know that. Well, I've seen him like sing children's songs on talk shows and stuff.
I caught him on Dr. Demento. He had the GNU song, I'm a GNU, which cracks me up every time I heard it. And then I was stunned to find out it was John Lithgow. I was like, wow, this is great.
I wonder if he worked with Gary GNU. From the Great Space Coaster. Former guest of the Flopcast.
At the very least, Gary GNU must have been an inspiration.
We are huge in the GNU community, as you know.
Yes.
He was in the Twilight Zone movie of the early 80s. They did Twilight Zone the movie, very controversial movie with a tragic story, of course. But he was in the William Shatner role, the remake of Nightmare at 20,000 Feet.
Yeah, the range of his work, it's crazy. I mean, I know him for his silly stuff, like Third Rock and his songs and what have you. But yeah. He was in the 2019 Pet Sematary movie. And
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Did not know that even happened. Was he, I think he was in The Day After.
Yes.
That nuclear winter horrifying TV movie of the mid 80s. He was in that?
Yes, I believe he was.
Yeah, I think he was. That was right around the Footloose era.
So, if for no other reason than his versatility, and you're on the same page as him when it comes to dancing, happy birthday, John Lithgow.
Well, sure.
75 on October 19th.
Okay, we should stop the show right now and watch Footloose again.
I would be 100% agreeing with you if we weren't going to be talking about Saturday morning cartoons from the 90s.
Yeah, we do have cartoon talk.
We have business, Kevin.
Coming up, very important cartoon business. Yeah, this is a sort of a follow-up to back in the spring. We spent 3 episodes of the Flopcast looking at all the Saturday morning cartoons of the year 1980. Now we've jumped ahead a decade to the fall of 1990. And 2 weeks ago, we did ABC, the whole ABC Saturday morning lineup. And moving alphabetically, today we are on CBS.
Makes sense.
Most of these shows I saw little or none of at the time, so I'm guessing you saw more of this stuff than I did, but let's go. I know we're starting with a favorite of yours, 8 a.m. CBS, Saturday morning, 1990, Muppet Babies.
Oh, that was the best thing to happen to 8 o'clock Saturday morning was Muppet Babies.
And that had been going for quite a while at this point, right? Muppet Babies, 8 seasons, 1984 through 91.
I watched them all. So, Kevin, do you remember when we were at MegaFest and I found those hypothetical bootleg DVDs?
Yeah, you were going out of your mind snapping up bootleg DVDs, including a complete Muppet Babies bootleg DVD set. It was like a guy in a trench coat came up to us, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much how I remember it.
You handed over a lot of money, and then you were handed a paper bag full of Muppet Baby bootleg DVDs. Yes, have you watched the whole thing?
Yes, I have.
Wow, yes. That's a lot.
Yes.
It's a lot of cartoons.
It is. It was so great. As much as I love the show, though, I think my very favorite part of it was the end, when Animal would say, go bye-bye, and, like, eat the screen.
Oh, wow.
Baby Animal was my hero.
So I looked up Muppet Babies today. Since I know nothing about Muppet Babies, did not watch it, I looked it up today, and I saw that Camilla the chicken was on it.
Chicky Camilla, yes.
And now, Wikipedia says Camilla appeared in the form of Gonzo's stuffed baby chick.
Yes, with a little stuffed animal.
So Camilla was just like a toy that belonged to Gonzo on this show?
Yeah, kind of like a favorite teddy bear, except in chicken form.
Not a real live chicken.
Yeah.
Interesting. And yet, Camilla had a voice, because according to, again, I'm just on Wikipedia, but 3 different people voiced Camilla on the cartoons. What was that about?
I don't know if it squeaked, maybe?
Perhaps, yeah. It says Camilla was voiced by Dave Coulier.
I don't remember Camilla ever having a voice. This is, and I've watched it all. This is so weird.
According to this article, 3 different people voiced Camilla, including Full House's Dave Coulier, Russi Taylor, who we talked about earlier this year. I think Russi Taylor was the voice of Minnie Mouse. And of course, Frank Welker also voiced Camilla. I don't know what that's about. Howie Mandel did some voices in the first couple of seasons, at least. And one thing that I found really interesting that I had no idea is that there was, like, one of the lead characters was their nanny, right?
Nanny. You only ever saw her legs.
Right, right. Voiced by Barbara Billingsley, who's very important to me. Barbara Billingsley, Cornflake, that's June Cleaver from Leave It to Beaver. That's the Wally and Beaver's mother.
Yeah, and she's totally at the mom voice, so it made sense for Nanny.
I had no idea. She was a regular for the entire run of Muppet Babies. She was the voice of that nanny.
She was excellent.
Yeah, oh, she's great. The mayor and I have been rewatching Leave It to Beaver. Like, for the last couple of years, we've just been slowly going through the whole series. Had no idea Barbara was on your Muppet cartoon.
I didn't know that was her either. I hadn't put 2 and 2 together.
Do you think if they just hired the entire cast of Leave It to Beaver to voice all the Muppet Babies, that show would still be running to this day?
I wouldn't rule it out.
Would somebody please give Jerry Mathers a job? Cornflake, let's move on. At 9 o'clock, Muppet Babies ran a full hour, 8 to 9. 9 o'clock, another hour-long show, Garfield and Friends.
This was also glorious. So you had a couple of my favorite things, Muppets and Garfield, back to back. Perfect Saturday morning.
Yeah, so you were pretty locked in on CBS back then.
Oh, for sure. I thought Saturday mornings were the best on CBS.
Although, as we learned a couple of weeks ago, your New Kids on the Block were over there on ABC.
Oh, yeah. I'd break away at 10:30 for that, totally.
But 9 o'clock, Garfield. Garfield ran 7 seasons, 88 through 94.
I loved it. not just the main characters, of course, but there were also these cartoons, U.S. Acres.
Yeah, well, because U.S. Acres was another comic strip. That was a newspaper strip, a second strip that Jim Davis had started in the 80s.
And I don't remember ever seeing the strip in the newspaper for U.S. Acres.
Yeah, I saw the strip. I remember the strip starting. But since it was out at the time that this show happened, there were Garfield segments, and then there were also U.S. Acres segments. This was set on a farm, so it was all, you know, farm animals, right? I remember there were pigs and chickens and stuff. And there was a chicken that never hatched out of its shell.
Yes.
Remember Sheldon?
Sheldon.
I remember Sheldon from the newspaper strip, but this was just an egg with the chicken feet sticking out of it.
Yes. It was marvelous.
And not a bad idea. Wouldn't you like to just live in an egg?
I think that little chick had the right idea, actually.
Yeah. I think we're all getting very close to doing just that. Sheldon the Walking Egg, by the way, voiced by Frank Welker.
Oh, of course.
What do you know? Amazing lineup of voice talent on Garfield and Friends. And I've read some stories over the years about the production of this show because the head writer, Mark Evanier, I've read his books and blogs and stuff over the years. So he's written quite a bit about his experience on Garfield. But since he was in a position to book the voice talent for this show, he booked everybody. Like, he got these amazing guest stars. I was flipping through a list of people who did voices on this show, and it's a long, long, long list. But Cornflake, this is just a tiny sampling. But June Foray, Stan Freeberg, Don Messick, Howard Morris, Gary Owens, Kevin Meaney, you know, Boston comedian Kevin Meaney, Jonathan Winters, Don Knotts, Harvey Korman, Buddy Hackett, Marvin Kaplan, Mark Hamill, James Earl Jones, Wolfman Jack. That's a tiny sampling.
Just to name a few. And as I recall, the Saturday morning cartoon came along after a few years of rotation of the holiday specials. Like, the holiday specials came first, and then it was available every Saturday morning.
Every single week. And I overlooked the most important name, speaking of voice talent, of course, Lorenzo Music, voice of Garfield.
Yes. So not every animal that you've never heard before in a comic strip or a cartoon sounds good once you get a voice to it. Like, I remember when the Pink Panther got a voice many, many years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, that was just wrong.
Later. Right. And yet, when it happened for Garfield, Lorenzo Music, like, I can't picture any other voice besides Lorenzo Music for Garfield.
And that was a voice that people who were old enough to be watching stuff in the 70s knew that voice from Rhoda, from the old Rhoda sitcom, because Lorenzo Music was Carlton the doorman, and you would just hear his voice over their intercom.
See, I don't remember that.
Yeah, a little before your time, but he was very funny, but it's that same voice. And there actually was a Carlton the Doorman cartoon. They made one, like, pilot episode of a Carlton the Doorman cartoon. I remember watching that thing a million years ago. But absolutely the perfect Garfield, of course, was Lorenzo Music. Back in our 1980 Saturday morning shows, we covered Heathcliff.
Right.
Which was a less successful, I would say, translation of a comic strip cat to Saturday morning animated form.
Agreed.
They had Mel Blanc doing the voice, but even that didn't work. Jumping ahead to 10 o'clock, not a new series technically. It had already been around for a couple of years in syndicated form, but this was its debut in 1990 as a network Saturday morning cartoon. That's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was kicking around since 87 in various syndicated forms. Then it moved to CBS for the 1990 Saturday morning season.
Yeah, I recall my reaction to that being, oh, this is on now. I was so used to being able to see it. I think it was Sunday mornings on local channel WLVI 56.
Yeah, it would have been all different times of in syndication. And the syndicated version was probably half hour, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and afternoons.
Whereas this one, now it's an hour long. So they added some stuff to it as well. They added Turtle Tips segments. Little 30-second, like, PSA kind of clips.
I believe it, I just don't remember it.
So I watched a couple of them today. I watched the Ninja Turtle brushing its teeth. Do turtles have teeth?
Yeah.
Ninja Turtles do, I guess. One of the Ninja Turtles was brushing his teeth and getting a lecture about how turn the water off. Don't leave the water running the whole time you're brushing your teeth.
Oh, my goodness.
That was a turtle tip for the children. So you were watching the Ninja Turtle cartoon also?
Not the Saturday morning one, because I don't remember the turtle tips. I think I would see it come on and go...
It's almost time for the New Kids on the Block.
Well, there was that.
I saw very little of the Ninja Turtle cartoon, just a couple minutes here and there. And I was reading the original black and white comics when it first started in the mid-80s.
Yeah, you didn't need bandana colors to tell your turtles apart.
They were indistinguishable, one turtle from the next in their original form. That's one of the things that makes it so crazy that it became such a cultural phenomenon, is that if you were trying to create something to be a big money-making toy line and, you know, kids merchandise kind of a thing, you never would have done this. You know, it never would have come out like that, that here's your four lead characters. They all look exactly alike. You know, somebody in a boardroom would have been, no. We want to sell four toys, so they can't all look alike. The kid's only going to buy one toy, you know?
Right.
So that never would have gone over. They never would have done that. And also just the name. It's such a crazy, long, clunky, goofy name because it was a parody comic book, you know? Yeah. They weren't trying to sell toys and cartoons to children. They were just trying to make fun of other comic books. And that's why they gave it such a crazy name.
So they were a parody, and then they themselves got parodied.
Oh, sure.
I do remember there being a parody, like the Middle-Aged Mutant Samurai Slugs or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, even in the comic books, there was a wave of comic book parodies, like the Adolescent Radioactive Black Belt Hamsters.
Yes.
There were like a half dozen different comic book titles like that. It got crazy. I have a bunch of them here. But there you go. Ninja Turtles. Now let's jump to 11 o'clock, and this was the only completely new cartoon for the CBS lineup in 1990, making its debut, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures, the cartoon.
When I saw this in the list of shows we were going to talk about today, I was like, what is this? I don't remember this at all.
Yeah, I certainly never saw the Bill and Ted cartoon, but then I've never even seen the movies.
Oh, well, I've seen the movies.
Yeah, everybody else has seen the movies. I tried to watch the first movie not too long ago, and it just, I don't know, I lasted like 5 minutes. And I'm like, what are we doing?
Oh, it's dumb fun, but...
So Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures, the cartoon series, it ran two seasons, and this is weird. It's hard to think of other examples of this happening. Between the two seasons, it jumped to a different animation studio.
Oh, that is odd.
Yeah, season one, Hanna-Barbera, and interestingly, they actually used the original movie cast, provided the voices. You had Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter and George Carlin did their own voices for the cartoon.
Oh, well, that's a treat, because that's not normally how things worked out in cartoon world.
Right, right. That was season one. Then season two, they jumped over to DIC, another cartoon studio. They did Inspector Gadget, and they did a bunch of stuff. They moved over there, and completely new voice cast. The movie actors were out, and actually the guys that they brought in to play Bill and Ted would also play Bill and Ted on the 1992 live-action Bill and Ted TV series.
My goodness.
Which apparently is something that happened, which I also have zero memory of.
Yeah, I think I blacked that right out. I don't remember that being a thing.
Isn't that weird, though, that they hired these guys to do the voice of the cartoon, and then the following year, they put those same guys in front of the camera for a live-action version?
Well, the 90s were weird.
Evidently. So you didn't see this cartoon?
No, I did not.
I watched like 2 minutes of it earlier today.
So I did the same, but I couldn't make it through 2 minutes of it.
I watched like the opening song, which was terrible, and about 30 seconds of an episode. And I did like how the George Carlin character is like this big, tall, hulking guy.
Oh, yeah. Rufus.
Which looked very silly to me because Carlin was kind of a tiny little guy.
Yes.
They really bulked him up for the cartoon.
That's a perk, I guess, when you're a cartoon.
Yeah, but I did not last long, though. I got through like a minute and a half of a Hanna-Barbera version. Then I jumped to a season two episode, and I lasted like 8 seconds.
Yeah, it's not good.
Well, there you go. Bill and Ted. That was a surprise to both of us. 11:30. Now we have the final season, season 5 of Pee-wee's Playhouse.
I'm sad that it was the final season.
It was amazing.
That show was just magical.
I mean, like, where do you begin? There was just so much going on in that. How they packed so many characters and puppets and contraptions and everything in the house is alive, and Phil Hartman's there. Come on.
Yeah, and just the whole array of characters, everything from a genie in a cabinet zombie to a talking chair to a pterodactyl to a talking globe and Globy.
I like the robot.
Oh, the Conky.
Yes. I do like a good robot. I liked, remember the Penny cartoon? Like a weird claymation girl?
That was really strange.
Yes. So many weird things. There's that marionette kid.
Oh, yeah. And he was kind of a bully.
Yeah. That was weird.
Yes.
Well, I mean, Pee-wee, you know, Paul Reubens would have grown up in a time when there were those kid shows, Howdy Doody. There were those old-fashioned, you know, live-action hosts that they'd throw to a cartoon and there'd be puppets. And so that's really what he was doing, is that this was like a throwback to 1950s-style children's TV, but just ramped up with this 80s insanity.
Yeah, because he had, like, Curtis, that cowboy guy, and
sure,
and
that was Lawrence Fishburne.
Yes,
you know, that was like one of your great actors is Cowboy Curtis. And I know I've been whining about this all year, but I was supposed to see Paul Reubens in person this year, back in the spring, like in March or April, because Paul Reubens started touring at the beginning of the year. He was touring with the movie Pee-wee's Big Adventure. So you'd go to a theater, watch the movie, and then Paul Reubens would do a Q&A and talk and stuff.
And then COVID ruined everything.
Yeah, we had tickets to go see him in Boston. I think a bunch of us did. Ken Reed was going to be there. Our buddy Ken from TV Guidance Counselor, he was going to be there. Andrea, our friend Andrea, she was going. A big crowd of us were going to go see Pee-wee. Then it all got ruined. Although I did see Andrea yesterday.
You did?
Even though I'm not seeing anybody, I literally just happened to bump into Andrea on the street. I was just out running. I was finishing a run. And oh, there's Andrea.
That's funny.
So yeah, we stood very far apart and had a quick little reunion just in the middle of the street. But yeah, we both were also supposed to be at the live Pee Wee Herman show this year. But back in 1990, wrapping up a pretty amazing run of Saturday morning TV, there's Pee-wee's Playhouse, with a theme song by Cyndi Lauper, also we must mention.
That makes sense.
It's Cyndi singing your theme song. How do you miss? One more, Cornflake. Let's end at noon.
Oh, this is such an anticlimactic end.
This is a show I definitely never saw until earlier today. We had Dink, the Little Dinosaur.
I watched Dink. Don't ask me why I watched Dink.
I was wondering if you ever saw this thing.
I think it might have been the hook and appeal of cute baby animals at the time.
It was so ridiculously cute. I couldn't take it. I watched about 14 seconds of this thing today.
Super duper saccharine. And
oh, intolerably so.
It was just little dinosaur characters being adorable. That's all it was.
Yeah, and like there weren't any human characters or anything. Like they seemed to play it pretty straight as far as it's just a bunch of dinosaurs.
Yep.
I was surprised by that. That you know, usually they kind of play with the timeline of history, you know, and they'll work in some people or you know, Land of the Lost, Valley of the Dinosaurs. There's always a way to mix in some other elements. But this is just, nope, dinosaurs. Here you go.
And it would totally rot your brain, and no wonder my parents would look in on me and kick me off the TV at noon. It was because the dinosaur was on, and I was, for whatever reason, sponging it up.
Dink the Little Dinosaur ran 2 seasons. This was the second and final season, produced by Ruby Spears, who did a lot of good stuff over the years. Well, Ruby Spears did, Plastic Man and Superman. They did tons of great cartoons. This is probably not their finest hour.
But they were smart, because they were totally riding the coattails of The Land Before Time.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. What it's totally missing, though, is Sleestaks. You know, you look at Land of the Lost, here's some dinosaurs, but also, Here's some giant creepy lizard monsters.
Yeah, Dink had a slee stack void.
A very unfortunate lack of slee stacks and no Chaka. Land of the Lost is the winner there. In fact, I think the following year is when they brought back Land of the Lost. They did that new version, which was inferior to the 70s original, of course. But it still had to be a lot better than Dink the Little Dinosaur.
Agreed. Cute as it was.
But that's essentially how we wrap up Saturday morning on CBS. There was also CBS Story Break after this, which was their long-running kind of anthology thing, but I think that was just all reruns at this point. Cornflake, that is your CBS lineup for Saturday, 1990, and man, you were on board for a lot of this.
Yeah, there were a lot of shining stars in the lineup on Saturday morning at CBS this time.
It looks like, except for when your new kids would come on ABC, you were a CBS kid back then.
Very much.
There you go. Okay. Oh, I pulled up something. I have a little 1990 bonus for you.
Oh, what'd you get?
I was just curious about what was on the radio at this time. So I've actually pulled up a list of the top 10 songs from the week of September 15th, 1990.
Oh, they're going to be my jams.
This would have been the beginning of that Saturday morning cartoon season. And I think I know three of these songs.
I'm going to bet that I know all of them.
Oh, wait, I know four. Correction, I know four of these songs. Here you go. Number 10, I don't know this one, Close to You by Maxi Priest.
Yep. Loved that song.
What is that?
Yes.
I don't even know what Maxi Priest is.
Maxi Priest was kind of R&B and not kind of R&B. That song was very R&B.
Good song. Did you like it?
Loved it. Yeah.
Was it anything like Close to You by the Carpenters?
It was nothing like the Carpenters, but I now wonder what a mashup would have sounded like.
Totally got to mash that up. Number 9, here you go. Here's your new kids on the block at number 9 with something called Tonight.
So this was the new kids' attempt to sound like the Beatles.
Oh, weird.
It was a cool song. Huh. It was not my favorite of the new kids' songs, but I remember it well.
They were trying to be the Beatles.
They were trying to stylistically mimic the Beatles.
Interesting. Did they have the mop tops?
By that point, they might have, but they also had rat tails, which kind of nullified the mop tops.
That's a deadly combination. Number 8, I don't know what this is. It's If Wishes Came True by Sweet Sensation.
Yes.
What's that?
Sappy, synthy, late 80s, early 90s song.
Was it Three Girls? There's a little tiny picture on my webpage here.
Yes.
The Sweet Sensation, Three Girls? Okay. Were they like Exposé?
Maybe like a young version of Exposé.
A young version of Exposé. Yeah, those old grannies in Exposé. Out of the way. Here's Sweet Sensation. They're young. Number 7, I know the guy, of course, but I don't recognize the name of the song. We have Prince, Thieves in the Temple.
This was one of the weirdest Prince songs to chart. How to describe it? I remember the lyrics, love come quick, love come in a hurry, there's thieves in the temple tonight. I know Prince sounds good. I have no idea why that song took off. It didn't fit in with the musical landscape at all.
Yeah, I don't know the song by the title. Maybe if I heard it. I might know all this stuff if I heard it.
Yes, I think you'd know Thieves in the Temple if you heard it.
All right, now we've hit a song that I definitely remember. Number 6, Can't Live Without Your Love and Affection by Nelson.
Nelson! There she goes!
This is Ricky Nelson's twin sons.
It is?
Yeah.
I didn't... Seriously?
Yeah, you didn't know that about Nelson.
I did not. No, I had their cassettes and everything, and I didn't know that. Matthew and Gunnar Nelson.
Did you know that they were twins?
Well, yes. Okay. That was a pretty big deal.
There was a picture on the cassette, at least. Yeah, they were the sons of pioneering rock star Ricky Nelson. That's his kids.
All right, I'm a little embarrassed I didn't know that, but I totally knew my Nelson.
Nelson, those guys are rock royalty, Cornflake.
Yes.
They were fun. I was okay with those guys.
I was a big fan.
I remember two or three of their songs. You know, catchy pop. It's fine.
I liked Time Will Tell.
I mean, they looked like female supermodels.
They did. I don't think I saw them before I first heard them, and I was very surprised at what they looked like when I saw them. Was not what I was expecting.
But they were good. I think in more recent years, they have toured, and they do like their own songs, but then they also would do like Ricky Nelson stuff. They did a show that was like a tribute to Ricky Nelson as well. So good for them. There you go. Nelson. Number five. I know this song all too well. Unskinny Bop by Poison.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
I'm okay with Poison. You know, it's goofy, fun, poppy hair metal. Why not?
That was, yeah, I did not like all hair metal, but I did like Poison.
Sure. Those guys could write a catchy song.
Yes, it was fun.
Got to give it to them. There you go. There's Poison. Number four, I don't know this one. Have You Seen Her? I know the guy, but this is Have You Seen Her by MC Hammer.
Yes. So this was a remake.
Oh, there's like an old R&B soul kind of song, Have You Seen Her?
Yes. So it was MC Hammer basically remaking that.
There's an MC Hammer version of that? Oh, no. Did he ruin it? Did he ruin it? Be honest.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's a yes. Number three, we have Belle Biv DeVoe. There's an exclamation point on this. Belle Biv DeVoe with Do Me! Exclamation point.
Oh, boy. Okay, so this song would come on the radio and I would sing along to it. And I would get interrogated by my parents. What is Do Me? I think Dornail and I, back in junior high, we'd be in the car, we'd be singing along with the lyrics, and invariably a parent would ask, so what is this Do Me business? And it was Dornail that quickly responded, do me a favor. Wow. to explain it.
Quick thinking by Dornail, yeah.
We knew what we were singing about.
Going to get backhanded by a nun. Look at Belle Biv DeVoe corrupting the children.
Do me.
Number two. I totally remember this. We all do. We have Jon Bon Jovi going solo for the Young Guns 2 soundtrack with Blaze of Glory.
Good stuff.
It's Jon Bon Jovi, but now he's out riding the trails in the Wild West.
It didn't sound different with it just by himself.
Not a bit. No. Was this just like a warning to the rest of the band?
I think so. Like, basically, I could do this without you.
Guys, you are all expendable. Check this out. Got to keep everybody in line, right?
Right.
Let's jump up to number one. And this is a song that you and I are both quite familiar with. We like these ladies, of course, around here. We have Release Me by Wilson Phillips.
Oh, Wilson Phillips was 1990. I mean, They were synonymous.
They were all we had. The 80s were over. It was scary and uncertain. And then, oh, wait, here's the daughters of the Beach Boys and the Mamas and the Papas. They're here to save us.
Yes.
So that was good. Yeah, I like Wilson Phillips.
And the fact that that song was number one shows that we did have some taste back in 1990.
Yeah, I really was not listening to the radio much at all at this point. And so I'd catch a little bit on MTV here and there. But as you can see, these are the top 10 songs. I knew four of them.
I was dancing to all of those. John Lithgow would not have approved.
Yeah. Surprising lack of John Lithgow songs in the top 10.
Huh.
I assumed he would have just been dominating the radio at this point. All right, Cornflake, there is your top 10 from 1990, just because why not? I just happened to look that up right before the show.
It feels like you did that for me, though, because I loved even Thieves in the Temple. I loved all those songs.
That is all for you. And just like the cartoons, I knew that you would know the music of 1990 way better than I do. So good job. You know what? Let's wrap up the show.
Definitely ending on a high note. All right. Flopcast.net is our website. Facebook.com/Flopcast is the place you can find us on the internet. Our Twitter handle is @Flopcast. On Instagram, we are the_Flopcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and a review. How cool would that be? Music from the Flopcast is written and performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
Sponge Awareness Foundation, most people don't know this. They were the twin sons of Stacey Q., that girl that sang Two of Hearts.
Where?
There's a little trivia for you. Quick plug, Cornflake, before we get out of here, and that is for the Dragon Con American Sci-Fi Classics track. Once again, even though Dragon Con is over, you know, over on the Classics track, we are continuing to do live online panels every week, and I just did one yesterday as we record. So this is available already on the American Sci-Fi Classics track Facebook page. You can watch the rerun if you missed it live last night. And sometime in the next few days, it'll be added to their YouTube channel also. So we will throw up links to everything as soon as we can. This was a tournament. You know how we do the flop fight tournaments around here?
Yes.
And over on the Sci-Fi Classics track, of course, they do Sci-Fighters.
Sci-Fighters.
Such as, of course, the notorious legendary Monkeys vs. Minions tournament many years ago, which I was thrilled to be a part of. We did a tournament yesterday. I have to take the blame for this one. This was my idea.
What did you do?
This was my idea, which I pitched 2 years ago. And there's so much to do on the classic track. We just got around to it yesterday. The concept was serial killers versus serial mascots.
As a cornflake, I feel like now I must tune in.
Yeah, so that is to say, like classic monsters from horror movies and slasher movies, Freddy Krueger and Michael Myers and so on, versus, you know, Captain Crunch, Lucky the Leprechaun, and so on.
Booberry.
Booberry, absolutely. If they all did battle, tournament style, who would emerge victorious? Well, we came up with an answer yesterday, and it's available for everybody. Check it out. It was so crazy, super fun. That was me and Joe and Gary and Deanna. What a time we had kicking around serial killers, serial monsters. It got a little silly, believe it or not.
I can believe that.
So again, we'll put up links to that and to the YouTube version as soon as that is available. But for now, Cornflake and everybody, you know, stay safe, be good, be kind, be furious and angry and ready to make a change very soon. We'll see you next week.
I am so ready. Peace and cookies.
It was Sean and the podcast about mankind. The Soulforge podcast was a dream given form. Its goal? To prevent fear by creating a place where humans and aliens could work out their differences peacefully. It's a pod for all, with topics including love, loss, sex, dating, and so much more. Humans and aliens wrapped in the ESO network, all alone in the night. It can be a dangerous place, but it's our last best hope for peace. The year is 2020. The name of the place, Soulforge Podcast.
Hey, Cornflake, it's the secret after show.
Oh, hey.
And I actually have something here from the old Flopcast mailbag.
Something came in the mailbag this week?
Something came in the old Flopcast mailbag. That does not happen very often.
Besides moths?
We actually, yeah, usually one sad moth comes flying up out of it. Why does the mailman come just to open the bag and show me the one moth flying out? You know, couldn't he just go on to the next door? Really rubbing it in.
Yeah,
the lack of response we get.
Twisted form of fun that they have.
It's a sick, sick man. Anyway, something actually arrived. It's a postcard.
Postcard to the Flopcast?
Yeah. It says, "Hey, Kevin and Cornflake, as always, thanks for the great podcast. I hope you're both doing well. So long, Jacob Howler."
Jacob sent us a postcard.
That's your partner, Jacob, that you made an album with earlier this year.
Yeah, I did.
Sent us a postcard. And the reason I saved this for the after show is that it's signed, Jacob, and then it says, "Super Secret After Show Listener."
Oh.
So, you know, I couldn't read this out loud during the main show. This is only for secret after show people.
Thank you for sticking around for the after show, Jacob. And to all of you, thanks for hanging out with us.
That's the back of the card. The front of the postcard is just a single beautiful illustration of a ship, like a giant old-fashioned sailing ship. But the body of the ship is shaped like a whale. On the back, there's a smaller version of a whale-shaped boat, and it says male whale.
A male whale. I love it. I love it.
Let's see. From Whale Boats, a Kyler Martz postcard set.
Very neat.
Very nice artwork. I like it a lot. Thanks, Jacob, for thinking of us.
Thank you, Jacob.
Appreciate that, buddy. And yeah, man, there's a Cornflake and Jacob album out there now. You released a Weird Music Upon the World earlier this year.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, let's pretend that never happened.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.